Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy.
Presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
Uh-oh. Don't look now, but Oklahoma legislators have gone to meddling again. Sometimes they like to play doctor. Think reproductive rights. Other times they like to play judge and jury, upgrading misdemeanors to felonies and increasing punishment. This spring, they are playing the role of education experts, ordering changes to graduation requirements that could adversely affect everything from marching band to foreign language instruction. For this week's ObserverCast, we invited Stillwater Representative Trish Ranson, herself a former classroom teacher, to discuss the woolly boogers hidden in House Bill 3278, which now has won the approval of both houses and is expected to gain the signature of the governor. Our conversation with Representative Ranson was recorded April 19.
So thank you for being here with us this Friday morning. I know you've still got plenty of work to do, but can you go ahead and tell us who you are and tell us what you do?
Absolutely. Trish Ranson. I am state representative for House District 34, which is in the heart of Stillwater. I have been serving House District 34 since 2018. After the teacher walkout, I ran for office. I was a music teacher for Westwood Elementary for 15 years before that, pre-K through fifth grade. So, and I am chair of the Democratic Caucus. I always have to remind myself to say that, but yes.
We're really glad to hear. We're really glad you could spend some time with us this morning, and that we really haven't had you on too often before for this, because as a music educator in particular, you know, you can really speak to the role of the arts and education, and and that's a very special thing, I think, that a lot of people don't necessarily explore. And so what we wanted to talk about today was the piece of legislation that changed the fine arts requirements for high school graduation. It kind of flew under the radar until the last minute, and then suddenly started seeing on, you know, the kind of the message boards with the educator groups, and specifically in the fine arts, kind of a, like, you know, the red siren going like, This is bad. So could you tell us a little piece? Could you tell us about that legislation, where it stands and kind of what it does?
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
And I do want to point out, you were one of only two in the House to vote against it. So
Right.
You know, so that was
something's going on here.
Yes.
Yeah, Trish Ranson is voting with Tom Gann. What's going on?
You know?
Oh my God.
But it really is like, something's happening. Like, something's not right, you know?
It's so true. Anytime you see left and right coming together, there's something going on.
Yes.
The bill number was House Bill 3278. Mm-hmm. It was carried by Chairman Rhonda Baker. And the Senate author is Senator Pugh. So right there, the two authors, they are very much education. They're both chairs of their education committees in their chambers. They are very much, if there's going to be education changes in the statutes, it's going to be from those two, because they have the most knowledge. This bill originally came out of a call from the state chamber. State chamber called, they surveyed their members. And one of the things that their members, the large businesses of Oklahoma, all said was that they were having difficulty recruiting and retaining employees from the state that had adequate skills. So there was a interim study this last year. And I remember when that came out, the idea that, you know, what's going on? I'm like, okay, well, that's good. We should be surveying the people that around us to what's going on and get their feedback. The interim study then talked about changing the graduation requirements. That put a red flag for me, just in the sense that if you're going to change graduation requirements, there is a lot of pieces to that puzzle. If you're going to do that, it's not an easy thing to do. I went ahead and I spoke with my superintendent here in Stillwater, Uva Gordon, and talked to the principal, Walter Howell, at the high school. And just to kind of get an idea, and Stillwater is unique in that we have a block schedule. We have four class periods at the high school, and one class period is double time, and it will cover a whole year in a semester. So it's pretty rigorous. It's a very different type of schedule. And my question was, okay, if we change the graduation requirements and include another math, because that was one of the things that came out, that we need another math, how would that affect the schedule? And both of them are like, this is bad news. Not only would it be difficult to incorporate that in a block schedule situation, we have students who don't necessarily need to have trigonometry, you know, as far as an extra math. And so we started talking about that, and wouldn't it be better if they were able to do, if they know what they're going to do, that they have go through that pathway and so forth. So I will tell you that when the bill came up, I had some other conversations with folks, and one of the things was music, where I noticed that what I was hearing was that it takes four elective credits and it puts it down to three, which really concerns me in the sense that I was a band kid. Both of my children are band kids. Yeah. And marching band in Oklahoma is big, and it is a 4-year commitment. So it's like, okay, what is that going to do to our seniors in marching band if all of a sudden they realize, oh, I've got to get another requirement in before I graduate, I have to drop band? That's going to be really detrimental to our programs across the state. And now, mind you, my experience is band only, but choir is going to have the same problem. Theater is going to have the same problem. Orchestra is going to have the same problem. And these are the things that kids go to school for. Mm-hmm. This keeps them in school. And these kids are oftentimes more higher. They have higher potential. Mm-hmm. Well, they have higher grade point. They have, you know, the more gumption. But that's what helps keeps it going. It keeps that machine going. And so I was like, okay, that's not a great idea. And then I also had a conversation with, I do a lot of work with the International Student Day at the Capitol. And so talking with the professors across the state that deal with international students, and then had a conversation with a couple of folks who are part of Global Oklahoma. And language is very important to them, obviously, because, you know, in international countries, they speak at least one language, two languages, probably even three, you know. And so the idea that in these new graduation requirements, that world languages isn't a requirement. It goes along with your pathway. So if you think, okay, well, I'm not going to go to college, and then then you don't need world languages. I'm like, my point was, okay, it doesn't matter if you go to college, if you work in a trade, or if you go into military, you need second language experience. You just do. That we're past the point where we can just be insular in our state and not have any exposure to other languages. So that was a really concern for me too. And so I will tell you that when the vote came up, I asked questions about music and I asked questions about world languages. And I had debated against a bill earlier that day, and I had gotten my blood pressure up as high as it could go that day. So I had like, okay, I can't debate against this because I need to get my blood pressure back down. So I just voted no. And I think, honestly, I've read through it now, and I mean, not that I didn't read through it before. I did, but yeah. You know, it's more like, okay, let me fine tooth read it. And there are things in here I think that are good. And I've talked with a couple of superintendents who were actually part of a task force, which really helps me thinking, okay, I was thinking that no education people were involved in this. And they were talking about, you know, the things that they would love to see in advances in the curriculum that they would love to see. And I was really glad to hear that that was the case. But when I come back down to it, are we actually able to do it? And right now, in the current situation that we have with a state superintendent who has vilified teachers, and staff and administrators and has called large school districts' accreditation into question, can we actually have a working together dialogue on new graduation requirements? And can we support it? Because this is going to take a heavy lift from all of our school counselors, because they're the ones that are going to be running this. And we don't have enough school counselors, number one. And number two, we don't have the money behind it to actually implement these. So now that I'm past all of that and I'm thinking, okay, I can see some of these advances, and some of these advances are, you know, not bad, but at the same time, we can't do it. And so it's going to be another unfunded mandate. We're going to have school districts who are failing simply because they don't have the resources.
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, okay, so 4 years of math.
So,
you know,
go ahead.
And I'm just like, so, you know, my kids go to Norman schools, and our district can certainly accommodate. I mean, they have the course offerings and they have the capability to go all the way up to, you know, calculus. Right. But I'm just wondering, the schools that are literally just down the street who don't have the bandwidth to teach probably past algebra two, I'm guessing.
Right.
You know, I mean, so our small rural schools, what's this going to mean for their capabilities? Right.
Absolutely. You know, we passed a bill that was a couple years ago, Rhonda Baker, that allowed for AP classes to be taught virtually in rural, which, okay, but how much more are we offsetting actual face-to-face instruction for virtual?
And can those kids in those rural districts access the online? Do they have the Wi-Fi at home,
or agreed,
have a place at school? Because I know right now in Norman, when you take classes online, you have to leave the school. You can't sit at the school and take your class, right? And so my daughter comes home when she takes classes online. And I'm just like, so where are those kids going to access internet?
Right. Right.
And they have devices on which to access.
Mm-hmm. And aren't we trying this session to rein in virtual classwork? I mean,
right. How are we saying you can't go to 4 day school weeks? You can't have, you know, virtual days. You can't schedule these things, but we're going to make it so that your district, we're not going to fund them to bring mm-hmm. in more teachers who can teach these advanced math classes. And I'm not saying, you know, Washington schools, which is the district I'm referring to, you know, I'm not saying that they don't have teachers that can teach, you know, pre-calc or whatever, but I mean, really, you kind of max out your math classes after a certain level.
Right. You know? Now, one of the things that, you know, when I was talking with the superintendent, Rob Miller is one of them. And so I was talking with him and he was saying how when their initial negotiations, their initial discussion about the four units of math, they were talking about including the financial literacy, which we have a financial literacy expectation and requirement right now, but it doesn't fit the rigor that would be needed. And so they're like, okay, well, if we do that, then we would have to redo the program. We'd have to make sure that the curriculum was at another level and so forth.
Honestly, it's a butts in seats situation. That's all. I mean, if that's what they do, that's all they're trying to do, is get kids. Like, I mean, it's what,
right.
What good does it actually serve?
Well, and they initially took that out. Okay. So they had that conversation of, can we include the financial literacy piece in it with the four requirements? And then ultimately it was taken out of the bill. The superintendents would, I mean, if it's going to be math that is applicable to real life, then financial literacy needs to be part of that. But at the same time, I see the way it is. I mean, both of my kids took it online when they went through high school, and I think they did it over winter break. I'm like, okay, that was supposed to be a whole semester and you finished it out in winter break. But I mean, that's what oftentimes we see, because they can fast forward, they can, you know, all of that. And so it would have to have a little bit more rigor than that. So yeah, the new requirements ask for 23 curriculum units, four units being of English, four units of mathematics, three units in laboratory science, and three units in history and civics. Then they have six pathway units that it's through the ICAP. Do you know what the ICAP is?
That's like the planning thing that they do online, right?
Well, no, it was a pilot program. And this is another, the piece that I had a problem with is it was a pilot program and Stillwater was part of it through Career Tech, where it basically starts with seventh and eighth graders and starts having that conversation of, well, what do you think you want to do when you grow up? Mm-hmm. And then start to cater what classes they take along the line. Well, what we're finding out is that, you know, seventh and eighth graders don't know what they want to be when they grow up.
And they
News
should,
flash.
You know what? They really shouldn't. They don't need to know.
No, you know? They shouldn't. I mean, and that was one of the things during the debate that I had asked about, because, you know, the whole idea of ICAP is that it starts to track you. So this is where this pathway unit that, you know, once you're on this pathway, you're on this pathway. And my concern was, okay, well, are we going to, is it going to end up like college and you change your major and then you add years to your study? I mean, we can't do that. So what does that look like? And I brought up the fact that, you know, in high school, I didn't know what I wanted to be in high school. I didn't know what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a rock star like Madonna. That's what I wanted to be. That was my career goal right there. You know, of course, then, I mean, realize that you don't need a degree to be a rock star. So I went to college and became a teacher. So same difference. But
I gotta say too, like,
yeah, teachers are rock stars. Yeah.
In their own right.
Absolutely.
Right? I gotta say, like, it also gives this false sense of security that, you know, you know at 15 what you want to do in college. Therefore, mm-hmm. I only have to take these many classes. I only have to take these classes and you'll be set. You'll be ready for college. Because the conversation we're having right now in our house is, you know, my daughter is a junior. She's taking pre-calc, which we were like, shit, pre-calc, excuse my language. But it was like, you know, but she has a marvelous teacher. And my daughter, who is very good at math, but hates it because she's an artist, right? She's a creative. She's like just excelling in this pre-calc class. But they were talking about advising and what her next math class would be. Right now, she's currently done with math. After this class, she has all her credits. And her teacher was like, well, you're not doing a STEM degree, so you don't need to take any more math. I was like, hold up. Hold the door. That, first of all, I'm sorry, but I finished math my junior year and got to college and had to take the math for non-majors course, and I sucked. And I'm like, and I'm just thinking, this is really terrible advice.
Mm-hmm.
You're closing doors for students down the road. And
well, and I think that's what this pathway is trying to do. It's trying to make sure that seniors don't drop math before they go to college.
And I support that, but I'm like, but that should be the kid's choice, right? Because, like, mm-hmm. I think what I'm trying to say is, like, she could actually go higher in math and my kid could AP out of it, right? With their four mm-hmm. or five. And then we don't have to worry about it in college. But I'm just like, I don't want to like stunt anyone's options.
Right.
As if they should know.
Right.
And be set on one singular path when they're 15, you know, or like you're saying, seventh and eighth grade. Jeez. Oh my God.
Yeah. Cause that's when it starts. And like I said, it was a pilot program and Stillwater was part of it. But not all districts were part of that. And so now they're going to have to institute ICAP and it's going to have to be super like complicated right out the bat, which is kind of like, ugh. I feel like we're setting people up for failure. And,
yes.
And, you know, and this is where, you know, the whole idea of like the rhetoric, the underfunding of education for so many years. I mean, this has been kind of a slow drip And right now, the last several years, it's accelerated to where we're seeing this mass exodus of teachers year after year, taking early retirement or leaving the field entirely for something a whole lot less stressful, and pays more. And you know, the this then we're left with, okay, well, who are we left with? And I'm not saying that we don't have qualified, wonderful teachers now, because we do, but they can't keep it all together as well as they could when there were more people around them and they felt like they were supported and they could lean on each other. We don't, we're not having that in our classrooms right now, in our schools. And so to put this on top of them, it's just like I can see teachers going, oh my gosh, I'm just barely keeping it together. And now I got to have a whole brand new approach. No, and just like not.
But you know,
So,
I'm sorry, go
no,
ahead.
go ahead.
I was just gonna let you know. This is another one of those at least I'm old enough to say this. We've seen this
Unfunded
movie.
mandate.
We've
That's what I
seen this
was thinking.
movie before.
Yes.
I go back to my high school days in the 70s where Oklahoma eliminated the foreign language requirement. And I thought, thank you, because I didn't. My parents were pushing me and saying, "You really need to do this." And I was a rebellious teenager, and it was like, "No, if I don't have to do it, I'm not going to do it." And of course, now I wish I had. But we've sort of seen that attack, and then we came back in Oklahoma and reinstigated world languages in the
Right.
program. We saw back in the Keating years a strong push for this very thing, sort of like we got to prepare every kid for college, so we're gonna make them do all this stuff year after year, even though some of the kids clearly are not headed that direction. We just keep recycling this stuff, and the chamber keeps saying we're not developing enough people who can meet the needs and so forth without paying a bit of attention to the fact that one of the reasons that we're having trouble hiring and retaining people in this state is they don't consider Oklahoma to be a very friendly place to be or a place that they want to stay if they're from here because of what the legislature's doing culture war-wise.
And I feel like there is this permanent like firewall between conversations and common ed, right? K-12 and higher ed, right? I mean, I don't, it's like the never the twain shall, shall meet, because I mean, honestly, I just can't tell you how disheartening it is to me when college becomes a discussion of only getting a job and not about learning, right? As someone who is in higher ed professionally, and I love teaching college students, when it becomes, and I'm now getting to that point where we're doing college visits, and it when the discussion turns to getting a job after graduation, it breaks my heart just a little bit, right? So this whole idea that kids have to have things figured out at 12 or 13. I mean, yes, maybe purpose. Yeah, purpose is good, right? But like, no 18-year-old needs to have the world figured out. They just shouldn't. They're literally still kids. But then also, it's just this continued, I don't know, do we call it monetization, commodification of education, right? I mean, just this, it's all about jobs, right? Getting kids ready for jobs, and that is antithetical to the idea of education, and right, I mean that should not be the end result only of a good, solid education, but it completely explains the fact that they want to take shortcuts on the path to education, right? Why the arts are being removed, while world literature, while all these, historical perspectives are being removed, the humanities are being removed. I mean, it absolutely makes sense if all we're thinking about is their marketability and their so I mean, I think it would be fascinating, and if this has happened, Representative Branson, please correct me. But if higher ed, vocation, vocational training, and Common Ed all sat at the table, and I know Common Ed would be like, "Don't call me that," but if the three of them sat at the table, it's like, what really is our goal here? I know it would outrage Governor Stitt and Ryan Walters, because it wouldn't be answers that they like.
Well, and honestly, you bring up a really good, you bring up great points. Number one, common ed. Absolutely. This is common ed to get everyone prepared for whatever the next step they take. Whether that be higher ed, or whether that be trade, or whether that be military service, or whether that
Right.
just be
They're
getting
all
a job.
honorable and they're all good.
Absolutely. But we're supposed to be looking at a well-rounded education for well-rounded individuals, and who are taught about democracy, who are taught about the history of our country, and where what it play the role it plays in the whole global history, and all of this. And we want, ultimately, we want good citizens. We want people who
Yes.
are good neighbors, who show up for their communities, who pay their taxes, who do all of these things. They vote. That's what we want. We want people to do that. And we want people to be able to take care of themselves the best that they can. Okay. And sometimes, if they need help, then that's where we are as the safety net of the government to help. But
Right.
it's always to make sure that they can take care of themselves. But you're right. It's now what we've got is this focus of, we are training children to be workers. And, children are human beings, and we need to train them to be human beings later as well, so that have jobs. So it's not just, they're just not just workers. And these are not widgets that if you do X, Y, and Z, they will turn
Widgets and
out exactly
sprockets, yeah.
the
Just
way
like in the Jetsons.
you want. Yeah, that's not how it works. And so during in this task force, yes, there was Common Ed present, there was career tech, there was higher ed, but with our current administration, there is a chilling effect that you really can't say what you want or what you feel, because otherwise you are going to get berated, you're going to get booted out of your position or whatever, because that is how our current administration works. And so you're right. I wish that we could all get into sit at the table and talk about what we want. Because if we did, we would find out that we want better pay, that we want better access to health care, that we want real life solutions to the urban and rural divide, that we want to make sure that our children get the education that they need, and that they do whatever they want, but they feel like staying in Oklahoma is a possibility. Because right now we don't have kids who feel like staying in Oklahoma is a possibility. And so we want to make sure that we're ready, and that we're that would actually make us a top 10 state, honestly, if we did all of those things. But we don't do all of those things. And instead, we punish Common Ed. We punish the teachers, we punish the administrators for not giving us what we want. And that's not fair, quite honestly. And I think, the whole idea of the state chamber stepping in and kind of taking the baton on this, and let's do these graduation requirements. I mean, that spoke to a lot of my colleagues, because a lot of my colleagues, who vote no on pretty much everything, they voted yes on this because they felt like somebody else other than the woke indoctrinating education system came down with something that they could agree with. And unfortunately, I mean, it's not real world. And we're not woke, we're not indoctrinating. We're just trying to make sure that our children grow into citizens that are responsible citizens of our state. And so I have an ideological difference with this. And that's why I voted no, because I'm like, we're not making workers. We are teaching human beings, and we're not thinking long term, because if we shortchange them with their world languages, we're not going to be world players, because we don't have enough people that can communicate. If we start cutting fine arts, then we don't have we're not creating human beings with the soft skills that they need to excel in work and in their communities, because they don't know how to work together without using words. I mean, that's one beautiful thing about music. I mean, you listen and you play together, and you don't use words. So they don't have that experience. And so I think we're shortchanging folks. And I think it looks good on paper, but in real world, I don't think it's going to be a good thing for Oklahoma.
So I want to, try and connect the dots a little bit more too, to what you just beautifully said. It's just the idea that what the open secret in Oklahoma is that at least one of our state universities, the lights stay on, and it has a lot to do with out of state tuition paid by Texas students. And that is slowly, declining because Arkansas is now, University of Arkansas is now a rival for those students because, they have reciprocity agreements in terms of tuition paid. But I mean, if we have a mandate from the governor to reach enrollment, thresholds for our state universities, I'm just going to say, like, these graduation requirements for our high schoolers do not make our students competitive. Because if, like it may help some of the students from out of state who, I just know that with looking at colleges for my daughter now and what the requirements are for admissions into higher ed, these standards are not going to cut it. They're not going to help our kids if they don't have, foreign language requirements, if they don't have fine arts. I mean, they are going to ding their admissions profiles. Does that mean that our kids go to state school in state? Maybe. But I, again, just the this the these the weakening of these requirements, they're not going to help our students. I mean,
Well, yeah, you bring up a good point because, like, my son was pre-engineering at Meridian Tech when he was in high school. And because of that, he was able to take computer language as his foreign language. He didn't take a foreign language. He took computer language, and he knows a few, which is great. And so, but he chose to go to OSU. I mean, he'd always talked about since he was little that he was going to go to OSU. His room was orange and black. I mean, all of that. But then, he graduated last May, electrical engineering, and he said to me just like last weekend, he's like, "Yeah, well, I could only go to Oklahoma colleges." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Well, I didn't take a foreign language, so I could only go to Oklahoma colleges, so I went to OSU." And I'm like, "I didn't think of it that way. I mean, it did limit him because he couldn't go to out-of-state colleges because they required a foreign language and it couldn't be computer language." So I was like, "Oh, okay, so the yes, it did. It worked out fine, but at the same time, he was limited in what he could do."
I mean, again, like if the goal is to, kind of put a kink in the pipeline so that the students can't leave the state, they might work. But on the other hand, this is okay in my brain. This is just yet another way that we're going to see a widening gap in the haves and the have-nots because you're going to have families like mine who are like, whoa, no, we're not doing that, and they can supplement and they can finesse and finagle to get the student that our students, one, graduated, but two, also with a schedule that makes sense for college, right? And that, or you're going to have the families who don't have the bandwidth and capability to maneuver through this system. It's another system, right? And so they're going to have students graduate who again are going to who may be ill prepared for what comes next, because and this is not at all a ding on those families. It's an acknowledgement that there are too many people in this state who have too much other crap, that they've got to keep the lights on, they've got to get food on the table if they can even do that, and yet to have to add this one more thing that they have to pay attention to just so their kids are successful in life, it's just one more thing. And so people are gonna just, it and also I distinctly remember going to enroll my daughter for kindergarten, and one and a dad was like literally a year late enrolling his kid because he didn't understand the requirements. And I just overheard the conversation, and the lady was like, so she should have been in school for kindergarten this year. So just, I mean, just little things like that, just
Right.
keeping the works. And so it curbs access, it curbs opportunity, creating what's only can be called a bureaucracy. And I'm like, and we're Democrats, we're supposed to like bureaucracy, right? But like, so I mean,
Well, and
oh.
so then let's also, I mean, you're making all really great points. And the fact that also the another layer to this is if things are not required
Who's going to take it?
and districts are having to make tough decisions to keep lights on and to make sure that everything gets done, if it's not required, it will get cut.
Right. And
So
you
it,
know,
instead of three foreign language teachers, you're going to go down to two. Or maybe one, and Spanish is going to be the only one. And so then it's like, okay, well, further limiting.
Right.
But or it may be the like you said, with the rural schools, there is no one. It'll be a virtual. And so then, well, what does that mean? I mean, it's like, okay, well, we'll subscribe you to Babbel and you can learn on your own. Well, you know, I mean, it really comes down to if we value it, we will pay for it. So, and we will require it. And this whole idea of, okay, well, it's part of your pathway. If you're going to go to college, well, maybe they are, maybe they're not. They still need foreign language. They still need music. They still need art, you know? And I had a mom who was upset that her daughter had to take this pottery class when, you know, she's got all of these other things. She's going into pre-med kind of stuff and all of this. And I'm just like, I'm listening. I'm like, what a valuable experience to go through pottery. I would love to take a pottery class. I was
I know.
get all my aggressions out. I don't know.
Shape the
But
clay that you
yeah.
can't shape at the Capitol. Yeah.
But you know, this whole idea that you've got to have it together, and now they're even talking about, okay, well, you're concurrent. You could actually get an associate's degree by the time you're 18. And I think, oh my gosh. I mean, a handful of kids that would be so great for. But the rest of everybody, what pressure that means that you have to have it together so that you have an associate's degree so you can, I can't fathom that.
No. I mean, and how does it help, right? How does it help? Like,
Right.
okay, you have a kid. I mean, you have an associate's degree. Say you then finish a bachelor's at 20. Like, are you socially and emotionally capable and ready to be out in the professional world? You're not. I've got the answer. You're simply not. Like, 22-year-olds are barely ready to be out in the professional world. Right. I mean,
Absolutely.
and if you and if it, you know, it's becoming like Shane Jett, you know, we know what he's doing with the so-called, you know, social emotional learning for pre-K kids, right? Like, so yeah, so we don't want them to sit still, apparently. But we're just throwing kids into a world where they're just not going to be socially, emotionally equipped to handle. And that's just utter catastrophe.
Right. And then we'll be upset with them for not being ready because we were ready at that age, which we
Right.
weren't. But
No one is. No one is.
and we didn't live in the same world that they
Right.
live in now. And I think that's
No.
another thing to think about. We don't live in the same world. I mean, it like my daughter was just she's 22 and she was just I was like, "Yeah, you know, I didn't touch a computer until after I graduated from college." She's like, "What?" I'm like, "No,
Oh.
there wasn't a computer." I mean,
Yeah.
I
Yeah,
remember the
I
first
yeah.
Apple computer that I logged on to and I had to like figure out how to turn it on. I mean, I had no concept. I mean, I didn't have a cell phone growing up. There was no
Yeah.
internet. You know,
I distinctly remember my freshman year. I was like, okay, how do I type in a URL?
exactly. You know,
Because
and the
they had like a sea of computer labs on campus, and there was
right.
like 70 computers like in 20 different places on campus because no one had a PC
Right.
and there
And
were
all
no
of the
labs.
dial-up sound that you had to wait
Yes.
for.
Yeah. And it was just like, I don't know how to do the web. I don't know what this is.
Right.
To how does this work?
But we adapted and we
Yeah.
figured it out. And I mean, kids, they that's one thing about humans. We adapt and we figure it out and we move on. But this whole idea that you've got to do it the way we did it when we were growing up is just not, it's not feasible. And, it's not attainable.
But you have to have some critical reasoning skills
absolutely.
To the world. And that is the ingredient that is really missing. Like if everything is just rote automation, sprockets and widgets,
mm-hmm.
no one's prepared.
So, and these new graduation requirements are very STEM focused, which, I mean, that's the whole point right now. You know, we want to make sure that we have students ready for the STEM world. But, you know, STEM in my view is hands-on learning. That's exactly what STEM is. It's hands-on learning. Well, we got rid of that years ago to test everybody. So that's another choice that we made that we end up with what we've got right now. It's a consequence for that choice. And the idea of now we're going to actually take out the A and it's not going to be STEAM. It has to be STEAM. We have to have arts incorporated. We have to have creative writing. I mean, if we're going to have all of the soft skills that we know people need in this world, we've got to have the A. It's got to be STEAM. And so I think this just, it falls short of where it's going to be. Now, I don't know where the bill is. I did not look up about where it was.
It's been sitting in the Senate. And I wanted to ask you about that because it makes you, and the deadline next week for the Senate to act is next week for the Senate to act on it, or it doesn't.
Remind me of the bill number again, 3278.
Yeah, 3278.
Okay.
So as I'm thinking, we're having an eminently sensible conversation here about big picture, what we should be doing in Oklahoma to improve our educational system, to improve the outcomes, to improve the kinds of citizens that we produce, all those kinds of things. And I'm wondering whether you sense that this is happening among the colleagues who sort of drive the education engine, the Pews, you know, the Bakers, you know, those folks that, and I'm hoping I'm maybe that there's a glimmer of hope here that they're, this thing hasn't moved because there are tweaks that people are looking at and saying, okay, these are things we need to think about, the unintended consequences that, as we've talked about.
I mean, it is a Pew. It is a Pew bill. That's strange too.
Yeah, it is.
He's a Senate
yeah.
author, so.
Well, that is a possibility, but I think mainly it's a, let's get past the drama that's happening between the House and Senate
budget.
Because it looks like it went through Education Committee, which is Pew's committee. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to go to appropriations. So therefore, it is not hung up in that whole appropriations deadline from the Senate. So it can be heard on the floor. I'm guessing that they're waiting for this next week so that the drama's passed. We can champion this and move on. The fact that it is backed by the state chamber is a big push in its favor that it will pass. The fact that it passed overwhelmingly, you know, with very little no votes so far is another push. So, and Pew is the author. So, so there's that too. I mean,
it seems like it's, but you know what? There's no co-authors yet in the Senate, right?
Oh, I think there's some that just got on.
I'm just looking at the most,
right?
Yeah, we've got two of the new senators, Seyfried
and
Thompson's
on there.
Okay, yeah. I'm just looking at the House and Gross version. So, yeah, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
We have several House
Kristen,
reps.
Davis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it's it's a live round that there isn't much time left. And I guess at this point, probably not going to change.
Right. And so then what does it look like going forward? So it would go into effect, let's see, it's going to start with eighth grade. So they're going to build it up, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. They're going to build it up. And so it doesn't start with eighth graders this year. I think it starts with eighth graders next year. So not the 24-25 school year, but the 25-26 school year, I think. I'm trying to find the wording.
It says students enrolled in grades 8 through 12 in the 2024-2025 school year.
Oh,
so it would start this fall.
Yeah.
They're not ready. They are not ready for that.
I mean, are they going to stop an emergency on this bill to make that happen? Like, how in the world?
Right. Yeah. So I think if they're holding it, they're probably going to look at the date of when it's going to start. And so I can't imagine them doing it anything before 25, 26.
Right.
And, you know, with our current superintendent, I worry about
What a mess.
what type of
Sorry. Oh
classes
my
and what type of
God.
curriculum will be chosen for the history requirements and all of that. So, yeah.
Well, you
I
know,
honestly, I feel like the worst, really the worst case, it's crappy, is you can, like I said, haves and have nots, right? So families that have the wherewithal to be like, ah, I'm going to put my kid in these AP classes because our state hasn't done what Florida's done yet, right? And started attacking AP offerings, and that's going to be the one way that students get this fulfillment of these basically humanities credits, right? You know, so these are going to be the kids that are going to be equipped to go wherever they want. But that is going to be predominantly students in districts like mine, Norman, you know, like
Right.
large districts with well-educated.
So Norman and Stillwater have same, you know, higher levels of
Yeah.
individuals with higher ed degrees. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, for our college communities, yeah.
But let's put a giant irony alert on here. And I realize that a lot of your colleagues in the legislature have no idea what irony means, or
It's just a song by Alanis Morissette, as far as
this
they
happens
know. So,
frequently.
yeah.
But that is, Marianne, going to create the very thing that the chamber claims it's trying to avoid, because you're going to have the group of the have-nots who are not going to be qualified. They're going to be the ones who stay in Oklahoma, and
Correct.
they're going to be the ones who are not prepared to fulfill the positions that the chamber is screaming that we're not preparing people for, because the other folks are going to leave.
Yep.
Yep.
Well,
So how about that?
yes, how about that? But in order to help those individuals, we have to tackle trauma, generational trauma, generational poverty. We
All the
have to
social
talk
determinants of health that we are really battling with.
absolutely that
Yep.
we do not want to touch with a 10-foot pole. And we have to. And the idea that, oh, well, that's just, it's too big, it's going to cost too much money. Well, it's going to cost more if we don't. And that's just what's
Yep.
so frustrating. It's like,
Yep.
yeah, we
So
could.
at the end of the day, I mean, I think we sort of know what the driving force is with the chamber on this, but for a lot of legislators, is this just pure performance politics that they can go back to the district and say, we're improving, we're working to improve, we just passed this package and we're creating a workforce for the 21st century. So it's really all performance. It's not practical
Well,
public policy
yes, I would agree
in a
with that, but it's not done out of malice either. It's done out
oh.
of uneducation. The fact that, you know, they don't understand education. They listen to the voices that say education's bad and it's woke and all of this. And so then they go, oh, well, we've actually now done something that is it doesn't it's not part of the system, so it's not woke. And it's like, but you have to, I mean, that one thing about public ed is that you have to work collaboratively and cooperatively with one another for it to work, and to then take out that collaboration and take out that cooperation, it's not going to work. And so this idea, so I don't believe that there's malice. I just believe that they don't have good ties with their districts as far as their school districts are concerned, that they don't understand what the long-term ramifications will be to any small tweak in graduation requirements. This is an overhaul. So a small tweak will cause, like you said, they got rid of world languages in the 70s and then they had to backtrack and get it back into. This is a huge, huge change. And so I just don't think that they've really thought about what the ramifications are.
Is this illustrative of the urban-rural split from the standpoint that you're in Stillwater, which is sort of you're in the in between world there in a sense, but you're in a,
Right.
you know, in a major university town. So the fact that you are in contact with your superintendent, that you're in contact with the Stillwater High School principal, you know, those kinds of things are to be expected. But a lot of these folks represent rural districts that are spread out. They've got dozens of school districts and so forth in their district. probably makes it harder, maybe, to, in some ways, to have that kind of contact that you're able to have being in a more close-knit community. I'm just guessing. Again, when you're saying it's not malicious, it's just
right.
They think they're doing something good.
Yeah, they think they are. And that shows in the vote. It really does. And it shows in the lobbying power of the state chamber. As so much as of what we've passed sounds good, but then doesn't work the way we expect it to. I think we're going to see that here in a couple of years and just realize, oh, wait a minute, this isn't working at all. Yeah. So.
Well, this is a happy conversation,
isn't it?
Oklahoma, why do we repeat these things over and over again?
But you know, it's, I think what's so frustrating it's just the idea that, that people at the Capitol make all the decisions and that we as regular citizens have no say. And we have to get away from that because we as local citizens have all the say. The people at the state government should be an extension to what the people are doing in their local communities. And sometimes we get it right. Sometimes we don't. Most of the time we don't, unfortunately. And the idea of, you know, pushing back and bringing things to light and asking really good questions, you know, is good. And we should do that. But at the same time, it's like the decision was made before the bill was put up on the board. It was, and that's why this last week was kind of an odd thing. The fact that the GNC bill failed, because no bill really goes up unless they have the votes.
Right.
And so
a statement that they put it up there and it failed. It
correct.
It. I mean, there's a reason they let bills fail like that.
Right. So it's like, okay. But, you know, you had mentioned something, Marianne, earlier about the 40,000 students at the higher ed schools.
Isn't that what you said?
The governor's goal.
Increasing the enrollment. Yeah.
Right. Was it 40,000? Is that what you said?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
It is ridiculous. Number one, Stillwater could not support that. yeah. But number two, you know, he also in his State of the Union speech talked about closing and consolidating the smaller colleges or some of them. And the idea that we would do that and then funnel the kids to the two institutions, OU and OSU, I think really goes against who we are as a state, because then we're consolidating our students and we will end up having students who don't go to college because of it. And we will have students who, you know, we oftentimes we think about the 18 to 22 year old, but we have students who are lifelong students. So, you know, the mom who has had her kids and wants to go back to college so that she can get her degree and in whatever she's looking at. Well, she can't because she has to work and she has kids. So she needs something close that she can acquire, and she can go to school there. And if we do that, I mean, I think it's going to be bad for Oklahoma in general, just to consolidate that. And like I said, Stillwater cannot support 40,000 students. Well, I mean, we have 20,000 some right now, because it's about half of our population is OSU students. And it's crazy sometimes, you know, especially move in days and move out days. Oh my gosh. Don't go to Walmart.
But the notion of consolidation is preposterous from a political standpoint too, because can you imagine rural legislators if you start talking about closing East Central or talking about
Roger
closing
State
Southwestern all over the, and I can, hey, I've been around long enough. I remember legislators squealing like stuck pigs when they were talking about eliminating armories, which are, you know, were so important to so many communities, because you had all these, you know, guards people coming in, you know, for weekend training and what it meant to the lines, really. And I can remember the argument, well, we're not running a welfare department, welfare operation out of the Defense Department. Well, yeah, you know, you sort of are in that sense. And a lot of these towns, there would be no reason for existence, unfortunately, the way that things are going demographically and societally, for them to exist if it weren't for the Northwesterns and Southwesterns and so forth of the state.
Well, absolutely. And in Stillwater, I mean, OSU is our number one employer. So then what is that going to do to our local economy? So like the smaller colleges, they're the number one employer for their area. So what's that going to do for their economy? I mean, it's going to further tank the rural communities. And, you know, then they're only reliant on sales tax. And if no one's coming, no one's buying anything, then you have towns closing down. And so.
Well, I mean, and he, it's not just a matter of like, suddenly you have 40,000 students in Norman, you know, in Stillwater. It's okay, where's the classroom space? Where's the dormitory space? Where's the lab space? Where's the parking spaces? You know, I mean, just the actual infrastructure, in addition to the fact that you now have this many more bodies, you know, for 9 months out of a year in one community, like just that would require appropriations.
Right.
Hashtag imagine that.
So true.
So it's like, okay, so here's my final snide, cynical statement. It's like they're gaming the books for OU and OSU by making them the only schools our Oklahoma students can get into. I mean, so that's one way, you know, to get your in-state enrollment up, but at the same time, making the campuses absolutely incapable for handling these students. They don't have the instructors. They don't have the faculty lines. They don't have the dorms. They don't have the classroom spaces. I mean, we're kind of bursting at the seams as it is. So
Just another failure of woke public education.
Right, right. I mean, but really,
all just their fault.
Destining us for failure, right?
Right. Which is so frustrating, and we just have to fight back against that narrative. I mean, but that's what we
right.
hear all,
and to
every
be
day.
Clear, it's not that we can't.
Is that we choose to
we
not
just
do.
Can't because we don't have the capability, right? Like,
Well, and that's why, you know, every year we have the budget, and every year I get up and talk against the budget, because it's like, you know, your budget, your checkbook shows what you value. Mm-hmm. And so here we have the budget. This is our checkbook, and this is what we value. And we have so much money that we're putting in the bank that is on top of all of the savings accounts that we have. This is just, let's put all this money aside and then force everyone to eat peanut butter sandwiches for the month and rice and beans, because you don't want to spend that money on the things that you need, but we've got it. And it's like, no, we need to support life in our state. We need to make sure that we are providing the services that people need. We need to make sure that we show that we value education by actually putting the money behind that is necessary. We can't cut our way to prosperity. That doesn't work. We've got to invest, and we're at a point where we can invest. So let's put some of those one-time dollars and start investing. And then so that way we can generate more. And it's just such a different mindset than what is the majority at the legislature. But I mean, I'll just keep hitting it every time.
Right.
That's
my job. I'm just thinking of how the story that was in the news the other day about how I guess it's the ARPA funds that are going away. And so Oklahoma City Public Schools, or I think that's who it was, you know, they're having to eliminate some of the support structures that were in place the past couple of years. And the biggest one that sticks out to me is like the after school programs. You know, all the things that help keep kids in a safe place when they are not supervised by adults. That's a big one. That's a big one.
Right. And then you hear pushback of, well, they shouldn't be using that money for salaries. Well, that's what money is used for. It's used for people to help with what they need. And post-pandemic, we need it.
Oh, my God. You know, it's just like...
Yeah.
What you just gonna hand these kids $20? Like, what are you thinking it goes to, you know?
So, right, exactly.
Yeah, I just I oh boy. So, yeah.
Well, I am going to have to wrap up because I've got
Yeah.
the next thing I got to go to. I've really enjoyed having a conversation with you both. Thank you so much for reaching out and talking about this bill and the ideas of where education should be and what the state could do if we actually spent the time and invested the dollars. Yes.
The
Let's
pleasure
keep
was all
this,
ours.
yeah, let's keep this conversation going.
Yeah, let's do this
Okay.
again.
I would
Yep.
love to.
All right. Well,
Thanks.
thank you and have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.